Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Mark, welcome back to the show, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, glad to be here. Yeah, to all our Jewish listeners, best on the Rosh Hashanah today and tomorrow, and New Year for us. But I think the year is 5785 on the Hebrew calendar, if I'm not mistaken. In any event, thank you.
Mark, do you have a special offer to celebrate the holiday?
Okay, we have our offer. It's 2022 half off is the promo code, and you go to VRTrader.com and enter that in the promo code slot. So again, the promo code's for 50% off for new subscribers only, 2022 half off, just as it sounds.
Are you a financial advisor?
I am not, and I don't provide financial advice, but we do publish our VR Trader newsletter, originally launched as the Volume Reversal Survey back in 1979, but with the advent of the internet and dot-coms in the mid-90s, we changed it to VRTrader.com, and we are still doing that.
Mark, how would you describe what's happening on the markets this week? Kind of iffy, swingy?
I think the picture could have changed considerably, Jim. We have, I guess you might consider, a stimulus blitz on the part of China when they decided to launch a rescue package for their economy. And the Chinese stocks exploded, and that's pumping money into the world markets because of the activity opening up in Japan, which had been constrained for many, many months. That plus the Federal Reserve lowering their interest rates, not so much the rates themselves, but the psychology of it. So, you know, things could get a little bit more bullish here. We're in a negative short-term period, and we have the war going on, and possibly that could accelerate on the very short-term horizon. But, you know, the Fed seems to be obviously going to be more accommodative, and whether I'm not so much a believer that the lower rates really make a difference because so much damage had already been done, and we still have high inflation. But the fact that they plan on continuing lower rates, and then you've got China jumping on board here. Who knows? Maybe they're in cahoots on a certain level for political purposes or other purposes. So, you know, things are looking a little more upbeat if they're pumping all this money, both countries into the market. So, we'll see what happens here after this so-called seasonal negative period we're in. Of course, as I mentioned last week, a lot depends, I think, on the U.S. election outcome. Many disagree with that, but I'm firmly a believer that, the outcome is going to be very important, which could be a bit of an offset to the comments that I just made. But if Trump gets in and China continues to pump money into the economy and the Fed continues to lower rates, we might have a more positive outcome for the markets in 2025.
Well, when you said maybe China and the U.S. are working together in the background, well, it's in both countries' interests to have healthy economies.
Right. The question is, how do you go about doing it? And it's China was more restrictive on their banking and their version of their Federal Reserve in terms of opening up the spigot, so to speak, over there. So you know, that's really, you know, sort of changed the psychology a little bit for both markets. But the question is, you know, do we really want a system, you know, that's why I'm such a critic of the Federal Reserve, do you really want a system where the government's opening and closing spigots all the time and causing damage in the process, rather than keeping a more even keel approach to the markets and to the, you know, to the money supply. So it's really frustrating for an outside observer when you've seen all this over the, and study it over the decades, you know, how poorly the Fed has reacted, you know, particularly since 2008 before it started, kept a zero interest rate for the longest time and then suddenly jumps it, and China doing the same thing. You know, I'm still a believer the free market should make a decision. Now, you may argue China may not have the free market, but they certainly have a free enterprise system for companies over there that are making, you know, billions of dollars and selling products all over the world. So it's a communist country, but it's really capitalistic. So I just think, you know, we should all sit down and, you know, talk about a scenario where the free market adjusts interest rates and banking liquidity, not the government arbitrarily restricting it or expanding it for whatever reasons. You know, the economists that run the Federal Reserve are probably the poorest on the planet, and it's probably the same situation in China. I just don't believe in the economists and economic forecasts at all. So I think the free market really is the one that should be making the determination. If rates need to go up, the market will go up. Yeah, the market will go down. You know, interest rates will, the bond market will decline, and rates will go up, or the bond market will rally, and rates will go down. And that's, and sort of, you could argue that the tail's wagging the dog anyway, because we've seen the bond market turn before the Fed made its move. But I think that's in itself is pretty good evidence that the free market has a lot to do with what really happens.
Well, here in Canada today, they just announced there will be a seventh governor on the board of Canada, Bank of Canada. Well, that's just like adding another deck chair to the Titanic before it hits the iceberg. It's not going to make any difference. It's just another mouth to feed, probably, who's going to get a tax-free salary. How does a seventh governor help?
I can't address that. I know we have all the Fed governors around the U.S., and they all sit and have meetings. Some are voting, and some are not voting. But I'm a big proponent of the abolishment of the Fed altogether. You know, I just think it's a bad institution. It's done a lot of crazy things, raising rates during the Great Depression, for example, here in the U.S. over 100 years ago, and its actions since then. And even, I mentioned this before, even Ben Bernanke confirmed that, suggesting that the Great Depression in the U.S. wouldn't have been as bad if the Fed hadn't done what it did at the time. So, you know, I don't know. What can I tell you? You know, it's politically motivated. Economics itself is a faulty occupation, particularly in terms of market forecasting. It's already been proven many, many times when you see all the recessions that have been triggered by the actions of the central governments. Central governments around the world, we can jump on another subject, you know, for years were supposedly dumping gold near the lows, and now they're buying gold near the highs. So the intellect behind these decisions is, you know, not very appealing.
Now, when the Federal Reserve was born December 23rd, 1933, Woodrow Wilson, the president, believed that it would end the chances of having a recession or depression. And as our market historian Bob Hoy likes to point out, since the Reserve was invented, there have been 18 recessions or depressions.
Right.
So it's not really working, is it?
No. and there are those who have questioned it over the years. U.S. Congressmen and others have proposed the abolishment of it. You know, they're dismissed. You know, a lot of this is just politically motivated. You know, if you read The Creature from the Jekyll Island, the famous book that documents the Federal Reserve, and I highlight it in my newsletter just about every day toward the end of the newsletter, and how you can obtain it. You know, if you really look at that, you know, the suggestion is that the Federal Reserve was created and owned by the banks around the country. You know,
well, it
the
is.
Banks own, yeah, right. So the shares of the Federal Reserve, it's a private, federally chartered corporation, but separate from the federal government. And the banks own the Federal Reserve. And, you know, when you go outside the Federal Reserve, the guards and all the people around there are not paid by the U.S. government. You know, they're paid by this private corporation, the Federal Reserve. And you got to read this book. It's been a terrific way of educating ourselves a little bit about the politics and the control of what our country's finances are really all about. It's really crazy. This is what students should be learning in school, in economics and business, more than conventional economic theory, because you find out that supply and demand and all that stuff's a great theory, but when you have numbers being manipulated and arbitrary decisions being made, or incorrect ones, things go haywire really, really fast. I mean, just look what happened here in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, we blame the Federal Reserve for a lot of things, and I always talk about and joke a bit about Alan Greenspan back in the 1980s. You know, I'm not the only one, but those who would call him compare his work to a New York taxi cab driver, where he would slam on the accelerator and then slam on the brakes and go back and forth, meaning tightening or loosening rates back and forth in a very haphazard way. It's just crazy, the whole thing. So, you know, we have to deal with it. And the only way you can deal with it is follow the charts and the market. And hopefully the bond market, which is not being, well, maybe it is being manipulated, but at least it's a free manipulated market and it's not controlled by the government, gives us some sense of where rates may be going or where they should go.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on with gold?
Well, it's in a seasonally positive period. You know, it's sort of flirting with that 2700 target that I've talked about here for the last few months. We're due for some type of pullback here at some point. I mean, I'm bullish on gold and so forth, but actually the last few weeks we've been trading some inverse ETFs and silver and gold, made a little bit of money on those as a hedge, because at some point here, maybe it's after this October period into the end of the year, early next year, you might get a bit of a correction. In fact, I'm sort of expecting that. I mean, our history with the gold movement here in the last 10, 15 years has been you get these $200, $300, $400 corrections, and then it goes back up again. So you got to be sort of prepared for that, even though you might have a 3,500 or 4,000 or 5,000 or who knows what target ultimately. Bullish in there, little nervous about the seasonality and the possibility of some retracement here coming, and we're waiting for a technical trigger for it, in which case we'd lighten up on our positions, which are mostly ETFs related to the gold shares, and then we would look to re-enter on a subsequent correction. So we're in there, but a nervous long right here because of the fact we've come as far as we have, and we have some potential, you know, seasonal negatives unfolding.
Crude is now reacting to all this action in the Middle East, violence, missiles being exchanged between countries. And as we know, once retaliation starts, there's no end to it there.
Well, you know, I always remain positive on oil. And when we last talked, it was way down there, but it was looking like it was bottoming out. Got down into the $65 range or so. You know, I'm looking for, God knows, $150 to $400 in oil in the years ahead. But, that's the reason supposedly it rallied. But if you look at the charts, you could see how it was so deeply oversold. It was sort of panic sell-off in the oil. And, you know, we were due for a technical rally. So we're definitely getting that at the very least. And obviously, if things get a little bit more progressive in the Mideast, you know, maybe a much bigger move will unfold here. So, you know, we've been in there. Well, we've been holding the indexes long, the oil, and particularly some of the big names. So I'm just, you know, it's like gold in, on a certain level. You know, do you trade it or do you hold it? And so a lot of core positions we just hung on to because I felt that the upside was, you know, spectacular at some point. And though we do a little trading around it, I'm going to remain bullish regardless of the Middle East. I think even though the big companies that are now being supportive and the, I guess the government too of the nuclear industry and so forth have excited everybody, you know, you could argue, well, is that going to replace crude oil? Well, it really doesn't, because we need crude oil for a lot more things than powering our homes and our cars. So, you know, I still think there's going to be demand for it. So anyway, short term, we're in a rally here. We'll see how far it goes. As you say, perhaps related to what's going on around the world. But I think economically, we just have a multi-decade continual dependence on oil for production of all kinds of products. And even if we have to build these nuclear plants, I guarantee you a lot of the components and things that go into them are going to need oil-related products.
Right. It's ironic. I remember watching a documentary on the Norwegian solar power system and windmills, but they have to get access to them. Well, all the things that go to those things to service them are powered by diesel.
Right. Particularly in remote facilities.
Yes.
Right. They still need, you know, and talk about gold and mining. Many of the mining companies that operate, you know, around the world in many remote locations, how are they powering their operations? I'm sure, you know, oil has a lot to do with the power systems. I don't believe they're operating in remote facilities, high-powered equipment and so forth with solar panels, if you know what I mean.
Mark, I know you need to rush off to celebrate the holiday. And thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Facebook. We're also on X at HowStreet. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.